Hello, everybody. My name is Tom Reakin, and I'm a licensed addiction counselor at Heartview Foundation in Bismarck, as well as a certified grief counselor. Welcome to a program we call Recovery Chronicles. It's really a celebration of recovery, and every week we try to interview someone who is in long-term recovery, and today is no exception. We have a very special guest. I've known her for a while, and I even work with her at Heartview. And her name is Angela Steiger. And thanks for having the courage to come on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. My first question is always, tell us a little bit about your growing up years. Where are you from and everything?
Okay, I was born and raised in Bismarck. I've got two sisters and a brother. I'm the baby of four. You know, my parents have been, you know, huge parts of the community my whole life. So, you know, there were parts of the community that I got involved in when I was really little that, you know, kind of shaped me in you know, a lot of really good, solid ways, you know, and kind of set me up for definitely a certain kind of future. But it was, you know, it was a good deal.
Yeah. When you say set me up for a certain kind of future, what do you mean by that?
My parents were really big into, you know, education, you know, and being able to, you know, provide for myself, to do what I could for me and not have to depend on anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So would you call your childhood fairly normal? Fairly normal upbringing and all?
Oh, yeah. No. Nothing about my childhood is normal.
Really?
You know, my mom owned a production company and my dad traveled a lot. You know, my sisters and brother stepped in to raise me a lot of the time, you know, just a lot of craziness around our house. You know, mom was really pretty busy.
Yeah.
You know, if she wasn't working on productions or, you know, overseas doing something, she was bringing home orphaned animals from the zoo. So,
yeah.
You know, it was never predictable.
Yeah. Well, I know your mom is a very creative person. Did you inherit some of that creativity? Do you think?
Not as much as I would have liked to.
Yeah.
But some, yeah.
You know, she wouldn't mind us saying this. She was a guest on this program, and I think we had a lot of fun when she came on. So you're obviously a person in recovery.
Yes.
A person in long-term recovery. You've had some success with recovery. So you obviously were once upon a time introduced to drugs.
Yes, sir.
How did that happen?
You know, my first drink came at the hands of a close family member when I was 10. And I hated it.
Yeah.
And I got super sick. So I kind of always knew that alcohol, you know, based off of that experience and my mom's alcoholism, I kind of knew alcohol was never where I was going to end up.
Yeah.
You know, drugs happened, you know, with friends at parties.
Uh-huh.
You know, I hung out with some kids who were older than I was.
Yeah.
So, you know, I ended up trying drugs out pretty young as well.
Sure. I had an older sister, by the way, and not only was she older, but she liked older boyfriends. And so let's put it this way, I was drinking beer way too young because,
yeah.
You know, when the parents were gone, the boyfriends would come over. anyway, so you got these, what did you try and like first, for example, or?
Well, you know, the first stuff that I tried was never anything, you know, super intense. You know, I, at parties, you know, it was smoking weed and drinking. You know, I would drink whatever alcohol my brother's friends would, you know, provide me with.
Yeah.
You know, and then as I got older and in high school, I started to branch out a little bit more. In high school, I, did a little bit of ecstasy and, very, very little hallucinogens because I just, they scared me too much. I just didn't feel like I could.
They kind of, they tend to wear you out sometimes too, you know. I mean, in my case, and
I felt like it was never going to stop.
Yeah.
And like I couldn't control it. I couldn't.
Sure.
Yeah, I needed to feel like I was more in control of something. And then, you know, when I got into college, I started pretty much doing whatever was put in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I was surprised because, you know, I spent my freshman year at NDSU. Mm-hmm. And then the next 2 years I was at UND, and I was surprised to find like I'd go to parties my freshman year. And there would be, you know, heroin and cocaine and stuff at these parties. And I just thought, like,
it's pretty amazing.
That wasn't something I was ever going to come in contact with. But, you know, I did. And, you know, I liked heroin. I liked opiates. I liked benzos.
Yeah. How did you begin ingesting them? You know, by what method?
Well, it started out with pills. Like, just
swallowing.
I didn't have a fear of needles. I just didn't think that it was a really great idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had enough at a party one night for someone to convince me that, you know, this was the better way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
the better, faster, quicker,
yeah,
more efficient.
Heavier. Yeah. For it to, you know, feel it kind of roll over me. And I was just kind of sold at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, it was just really far easier to find. And, you know, than I thought that it would be ever. So
you're talking about heroin?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Do you think the average person would, maybe the average adult living in Bismarck would be surprised at how available?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. After my first support meeting, when I got into recovery, my very first meeting in Bismarck, I walked out and somebody tried to sell me morphine. Like right outside the door of the meeting.
Yeah, which is an opioid, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, similar to heroin. Yeah, you know, and Angela, by the way, we're talking to Angela Steiger, our guest today, and who's from Bismarck. One of the missions of this program, Recovery Chronicles, is to help create awareness, you know, just as far as what's out there in our own community. I think people put blinders on. Don't you think sometimes?
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
They refuse to believe.
Yeah.
That in the average grades, junior high school or high school, you can get anything you want.
Middle school. It scares me. You know, my oldest is going to be in eighth grade, coming up in a couple of weeks here, and it scares me because I know that at her school, it's not, you know, when the drugs get there. I know that they are there. You know, I know that they are there, and she's 13.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad. How old are you?
I'm 40.
Okay. What? Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised because you look a lot younger than that. So what do you tell your daughter? I'm glad you brought this up because what does a 40-year-old mom today who's been through a lot, who has seen a lot, what is your message to your 13-year-old daughter about drugs? And
we talk about it really openly. She comes with me. She knows my friends in the program. She knows their stories. She knows my story pretty much in its entirety.
Yeah.
And she's really grateful that she has that information because she says it makes her not want to go to those places and do those things and be that person. You know, she's really proud of my recovery, but she knows that she doesn't want to have to be proud of herself for that someday. She wants to just skip that part. Not be addicted, not be an alcoholic.
Sure. Isn't that great?
Yeah, she's really, really smart. She's a smart baby.
Yeah. And so looking back on your parents, how and when did they find out that you had a problem?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know when they found out. My mom started asking me, let's see, we lived in Madison for about 12 years. In July of 2011.
You mean Madison, Wisconsin? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
In July of 2011, the girls and I moved back to Bismarck. And it was, sometime after that my mom started asking me if I thought I had a problem.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, I really, you know, like anybody else, I thought like, no, you know. I'm good with this. This is how I live my life, you know?
So you were in denial,
I think I was in denial about how bad the situation was, how it was disintegrating rapidly.
Sure.
Yeah. But I think I honestly thought I had a grip on it. I thought I could control the whole thing. I thought that it wasn't going to get worse unless I let it get worse.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't until like I couldn't pick my girls up from school. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting, like, watching the driveway, waiting for my mom to pull in the driveway with my little girls, and then, you know, being able to look into the bathroom, you know, and I had stuff out on the counter, because it was always like, you know, I wanted to get just a little bit of a bump before the girls came home from school so I could be, you know, fun, cool mom, you know, and not stressed out coming down mom.
Sure.
And, sure. Yeah. You know, I kind of just got this feeling that, like, if it kept going the way that it was, one of those days my mom and my girls were going to come home from school and they were going to find me overdosed somewhere.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that for them. But it took me, I don't know, that thought came to me in August of 2014, and it wasn't until about October that I decided something had to change.
Yeah. Good for you. Yeah. Good. Yeah. And would you say it was quite a bit motivated by your children
definitely.
Having children?
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely. Yeah. I didn't want them to have to experience the pain of having an addict for a mom, you know, any more than they had. They were pretty little when I got clean, but, you know, Ava definitely in the vast majority of the scenario, you know, between me and her little sister, she was the adult.
Sure. So you have two girls?
Mm-hmm. I've also got a 10-year-old, Sophia, who's, you know, she's proud of my recovery as well. She's just a little more interested in everything else about the world.
Yeah. So when and how did you first seek help, you know, to... assistance, help? Did you reach out to someone, organization? Or
for a really long time, I just got mad at everybody around me when they kept asking. Eventually, I called my brother, and I told him that, okay, I think I do have a problem. And I talked with him about some things that had happened to me during college because of my using.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That had kind of spiraled the whole thing.
Some trauma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That had spiraled the whole situation and caused my use to just spike.
Sure. So, this was an older brother. You said you were the youngest.
He's about 2.5 years older than me.
Yeah. That's how much older my sister is than I am. And he was this was a brother that you could always...
Yes.
Communicate with and be honest
with.
Yep,
he started researching treatment facilities for me. Uh-huh. And as I knew I wanted to get out of Bismarck, you know.
For safety reasons?
And everybody knows my parents. And so I didn't want to put them in the spotlight and have them be, you know, disappointed, you know.
Yeah.
So I decided to get out of Bismarck. I went to Fargo and I detoxed at Prairie St. John's.
Okay.
And then I went over to Share House for long-term treatment. But I was a few weeks into Share House, and I couldn't be away from my girls anymore.
Yeah.
So I walked out. And
who was taking care of your girls?
They were with their dad.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So walking out of treatment kind of bred its own series of issues, because since I, you know, they're mandated reporters, so... the treatment facility had to report me to social services, who contacted Child Protective Services.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, there was that.
That created a new challenge, a new situation.
Yes, it definitely did. Yeah. But, you know, I got back to Bismarck, and their dad, you know, he picked me up in Fargo and he brought me home and said that the only way that I was going to stay was if I was back into some treatment program ASAP.
Yeah.
So I was back in Bismarck on a Wednesday, and Ron Gerhart actually got me into outpatient treatment at Heartview.
Yeah, yeah.
The following Monday.
Sure, sure. Let's pay tribute.
Yeah.
Ron was is a former executive director of Heartview, and he passed away just this last year. Was it 2018? I think it was spring.
Yeah.
And I think he was affiliated with Heartview for 40 years
as a counselor. He's an amazing person. He saved my life, for sure. Yeah. There was one night where he stayed on the phone with me.
Really?
Probably until 3 in the morning, just trying to calm me down and redirect me. And he saved my life, for sure.
Yeah, I'm getting all teary-eyed. He saved a lot of lives.
Yeah, he did.
You know, and by the way, as you know, we're raising some money for Heartview, and we have a capital campaign cabinet. His son is serving on our cabinet, I'm happy to say.
Tom's a good guy.
Yeah, and I just saw him a little while ago, but it's nice to have him. And boy, a lot of tears were shed that week.
That was a rough loss.
That we lost. So what stuck the most, do you think, in early recovery, or what were some of the things that you heard or that you did that made the most sense, that helped the most?
Well, my counselor at Heartview, mm-hmm. one of the things that she said to me repeatedly was, "Our secrets keep us sick."
Yeah.
And she said that to me 100 times a day. And
who was it?
Carissa.
Okay. All right.
And it just made me crazy. It made me crazy, and I fought her on it just tooth and nail. And then one day we were sitting in group, and I don't remember what we were talking about, but it was a topic that I definitely should have been weighing in on. And I just wasn't saying anything. I didn't want to. I didn't want to talk about it. I knew I needed to, but I didn't want to.
Yeah.
And finally, like, the group kind of stopped talking, and they were all looking at me, and Carissa looked at me, and she said, "Is there something you want to add to this, Angela?" And I was like, "No, I have nothing to say." And she said, "Okay, then do you want to explain where you're sitting?" And I had scooted my chair about 6 feet back without knowing.
A little
nonverbal. Out of the circle. Right. I just, like, trying to disappear from the group as much as I could. And so, like, in that session right there, I just unloaded.
Wow.
Yeah. I just kind of...
But it was
amazing.
It was cleansing. Huh?
Yeah, it really, really was.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, that, you know, that remembering that, you know, our secrets keep us sick. And it's still something that I have to remind myself, because there are a lot of things that I don't want to talk about just because they're hard, or they might be hard for somebody else. And so I keep those to myself, and then they end up breeding bigger problems later down the road.
I know one of my favorite corny sayings is they don't call it talk therapy for nothing. I mean, usually when you share a secret with a significant other, or in group therapy, or, you know, with a group of supportive people, it's, as you know, I'm a certified grief counselor, and you know, I help people talk about death, which is which is tough, and so often we addicts tend to stuff all those emotions and all those feelings.
Yeah, it's one of the things we're best at.
Yeah, and then and we forget to grieve, or we don't think it's necessary, or and then just keep on stuffing those feelings, you know. So So you work at Heartview.
I do.
You know, which is so cool,
and
I enjoy seeing you there each time, and that's got to be rewarding in some ways.
Amazing.
Yeah. What is?
Well, it's funny because I had an appointment with my trauma therapist, and at the end of my session with her, she said, "You know, you've got to get a job. You have to find some way to get outside of your house, outside of yourself. You're not just a mom, you know." I had an appointment with Dr. Hanke then, like, 2 hours later.
Yes, our medical director. Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I sat down with her, and we were maybe like 20-30 minutes into my session with her, and she just stopped and she said, "Would you ever consider working here?" And I was like, "Sold."
Yeah.
I'll take it. I mean, I still had to go through the interview and everything. I mean, it's the best job in the world. You know, I get to work every day with people just like me.
Yeah.
You know, I get to be reminded, you know, where I came from and how far I've come.
Yep.
And I get to watch. The best part is watching the light come on in their eyes when they realize that they don't have to be that person that they were.
And sure.
That they can actually live a life that feels good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I could say, and we're talking to Angela Steiger, and I could say you work in our residential center or unit, and so you're with these people for long periods of time, and you get to see them, you get to see who they really are.
Yes.
And so there are times you talk about seeing the light come on after a while. And there are times when after a couple few weeks, I don't even recognize the person anymore.
Definitely.
You know, they come, I'm not trying to exaggerate, but they come to us, spiritually bankrupt. Broken. And you can just feel the brokenness, the sadness, the hopelessness. And then they start to
come alive.
And like you said, the light goes on, and they might even break a smile once in a while, they have some hope again, and they think, well, gee, maybe I can do this, or maybe I am worth it, and sometimes I just, are you? I don't even recognize them, because it's a transformation.
It makes it hard, you know, when they hit their 30 days or whatever, to watch them leave, you know, because it's such a blessing to be part of that transformation from like this completely broken individual who frankly does not want to be there. They don't care about themselves or us or anything around them.
Right.
And then somewhere along the line, they decide that they might actually be worth something.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you hope when they leave that they'll maintain that the people around them will help them maintain that realization that they are worth everything that's going to go into recovery, because it's hard, but it's worth it.
Yeah. 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 How often do you see that? I mean, very often or not so, but you can identify the people who, plain and simple, they don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. They're there for
court,
court, family, legal reasons, and they're just going through the motions. They can't wait to get out. But how often do you see where even those people, even those hardcore people, begin to see the light and actually want to change?
Mm-hmm.
And do you see that pretty often?
Yeah, we do. And those are the most rewarding cases. The people that come in and you're just kind of like, oh man. You don't even want this, and of course we never say that to them, but it's frustrating to look at it and be like, how do you get through? But it's not our job to counsel them, it's we do, the other, whatever 18 hours of the day when they're not with their counselors or therapists or whatever, they're with us. And, that's when we hash out how all the rest of this is going to fall into play when they leave Heartview, when they're part of the real world as a clean, sober individual.
Yeah. What's the toughest part or the most challenging part of your job?
I am incapable of not getting attached to people.
Uh-huh.
I do. Yeah. I just get attached to them and I really grow to love them.
Yeah.
I mean, you learn so much about their lives and their pasts and who they are and what they're afraid of and what they love in their worlds. And you know how passionate they are about their kids or their art or their jobs or whatever.
Yep.
And you know that, you spend these 30 days kind of in this safe cocoon. And then when they leave, they're going to have to go face the consequences and repercussions of, their addictions and sometimes that means that they do lose marriages or jobs or, whatever. And I hate seeing those people hurt after they've made the decision to get clean or sober. I hate that they still have to continue to hurt, but it's all part of the process. But it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oftentimes, as we'll point this out, oftentimes in relationships, when the addict cleans up, the dynamic changes. When the addict sees the light and begins to love life again, the relationship changes, and, yeah. And the dynamic changes, and
yeah.
and things relationships can break up.
Oh, for sure, there are those marriages or relationships where you know there's the addict, and then there's the person who's addicted to the addict, and when that addict codependency. Cleans up. Mm-hmm. When that addict cleans up and they're not, you know, under that person's thumb anymore, you know, they've got their own spine. They've got their own self.
Yeah.
You know, this other person, you know, is still trying to like control them and push them and herd them, and it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. Now they're not superior in that, the superior person in that relationship. Yep. And so that's what I mean. The dynamic changes. And so it, so what are the... And I told you this would go fast, and I don't know if we've got about 3 minutes. Would you believe that? Seriously. But no, it's been a good discussion. We're talking to Angela Steiger from Bismarck, who is in long-term recovery. What are the secrets to your recovery today? I mean, what do you need to do to maintain every day? Of course,
you know, I have this group of women, and it took me a long time to figure that out. That I had to surround myself with women in recovery, that it, you know, couldn't be men and women, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have friends in the program who are men, but like for that solid core support system, you know, I have to keep it women who are clean and sober, who know me now. You know, I don't have a lot of friends from before, from when I was using.
Right.
And I didn't really use with anybody because I isolated a lot.
Sure.
But, you know, I try and surround myself with, you know.
Isn't that great? Yeah. Stick with the winners, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, people that I'm good being around my little girls. And
yes.
That I know when I fall on my face that they're going to support me and love me. But if I need to get yelled at, they're going to do that too.
They're going to call you out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's a question I always ask too. So for people listening right now. Maybe young women listening right now, and they know they've got a problem, and they've been putting it off and putting it. You know, they know they've got to quit. They know they've got to make some changes. And what's your advice to them? So they're listening on the radio right now. What do you want them to do?
You know, it's hard because in a lot of our situations, you don't have any one person that you can go to and say, "I have this problem and I need help." But, you know, Heartview's phones, we answer the phones 24 hours a day, you know, and if the calls ring into the residence in the middle of the night, like we can't set up appointments, but I haven't seen any one of my coworkers not stay on the phone with somebody in trouble for as long as they need it. And, you know, we'll take down the information and get that to, you know, the ladies in the front desk, and they'll get back to them and. You know, direct them in the process. You don't have to be the one to say like, okay, this is what happens now and this is what happens now. Like, we'll do that for you. All you have to do is just reach out to someone on that, you know, 1,000-pound phone. Just pick it up.
The 1,000-pound phone. I like that.
Call somebody and, you know,
that's
let
good.
Us move you down the line.
Yeah, that's wonderful. We're out of time. You know, thank you. I guess we'll have to have you back, you know. so guess what? You won't be surprised. We closed this program with the Serenity Prayer. So, so Angela Steiger, thank you so much. And let's pray. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thanks again.
Thanks, Tom.
I sing the song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand. Milk blood to keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done. A little part of it in everyone. But every junkie's like a setting sun.